Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. Please, 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 please support Jerry Wistrand's campaign in Missouri. Just go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you don't know where his website is, go to Candidates Endorsement. And on the Candidates Endorsement page on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you'll get a link there and you can start helping. Whatever help you can do, I mean, the communist kids were throwing, you know, $5, $10 towards their favorite communist, Bernie Sanders, what have you, not even really understanding anything. And folks, I think you understand what's on the line here. So please, truly support the Constitution by supporting Jerry. I mean, I could always ask for your donations, but I don't. I ask you to save them. Wait until these elections come in and support those people who become the champions, political champions. I'm here to help, and I'm not from the government, so I don't ask for your money. I don't even run commercials here. So we're not here trying to take anything out of your pocket. I'm begging and pleading that you would at least use the money that we're saving you so that you can go and support these constitutional champions. And so I will eventually start supporting and advertising for businesses. And you'll understand why right here, that if those businesses will contribute, and there'll be some expectations of what they contribute to those candidates who have signed our pledges. In other words, right now we've only got Jerry, so if I had 10 businesses, they would all be basically sending these obligations to Jerry. But if I had more, then I would ask either for them to pay or, you know, I could redirect them or manage it so that I'd say, okay, send 20 here, 20 there. Never am I going to be the middleman. I don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. What we want to do is we want to make sure that those people who are willing to step into the public fray and lead on the Constitution, we want to make sure they get elected. You want to end tyranny, you want to get this government back, you got to start voting for people who are actually going to support the Constitution. Or it's done. We're over. Anyway, I think that we have a go back. And I was talking to Sean after the last show about common law and civil law, or those government laws that are legitimate. And Sean said, yeah, this is pretty simple stuff. And I said, well, could you explain it to the audience? And I'm just kidding, folks. This is not easy. As a matter of fact, he's laughing because I am kind of funny. He was probably sweating in his boots. Well, because that's what I do to Tammy too.
That's not what happened.
Okay, so I'm not a subject matter expert on common law, but I do understand how common law had been integrated and how it evolved in England, and which is what we evolved away from. And so common law was the justice system that was for the people of Britain. And the basis of the law was, the foundation of the law was the Bible. That was the supreme law of the land. Because it's a monarchical theocracy, they used the monarch's Bible. And I'm actually kind of surprised that over time, the monarchs didn't start changing or reinterpreting the Bible. You know what I mean, Sean?
Absolutely.
Because when they start finding out that there's parts of the Bible that just make it really hard for them to govern us, then, you know, let's edit that. Let's replace that book with something different. My point is that in England, the Bible was the basis of common and civil law. You had to abide by, and they used that Bible. The reason it was untenable in America was that throughout all of the states, they were not uniform on a religion and a Bible, not at all. And as a matter of fact, we were, you know, even in England, and I covered this before when I covered the history of this, when Henry, King Henry, decided he wanted a divorce and made the decision to break away from Catholics or the Catholic faith, that didn't go over very well. Because most people saw that as arbitrary, tyrannical, despotic, what have you. What are you talking about? We've been living under this Roman, you know, I'll call it the Roman Catholic Empire. And they were a state within that Roman Catholic Empire. As soon as they severed that religious relationship, they became an autonomous and independent state. And in so doing, and it didn't actually happen overnight, but the bottom line, folks, is that the Bible is the one that kind of bases, you know, how you can set up your laws and govern yourself and all of that, which is a good thing. And especially if you're Christian, it's a good thing. If you're not Christian, well, in Rome, do as the Romans do. If not, then don't go to Rome, right? Okay. You know, if you're a woman and you don't want to wear a burqa and you don't want to walk behind your man or, you know, these things that would be put upon you, don't go to Islam. There's no reason why anybody would want to go someplace where they would be considered a second-class citizen, subjugated or treated against their conscience. You know, it's one thing to maybe go there, but remember that the law of the land is the law of the land there. And you do as the law of the land says. Don't go in and think, this is typical Americans, right? Where we walk in, hey, I'm an American. You can't do that to me. Anyway, in America, everything changed with the Constitution. It didn't change with the Articles of Confederation. The Articles of Confederation never declared themselves to be the supreme law of the land. What was happening under the Articles of Confederation is each state had their own, you know, church, and they had their own state governing, you know, body that was kind of entwined with the church. Eight states definitely had this strong relationship. The others, not so. The other five were, you know, more non-denominational. Nevertheless, the point is that when all the states came together, there was no way to unite them, no way at all. And this is why Madison kept, every time some people say, we got to have a religious test, Madison would say, well, what Bible are we going to use? Sure, absolutely, that's a great idea. What Bible are we going to use? Because as soon as you ask that question, all of a sudden, you just, everybody's eyes, you know, get pop out of their head. They're peaked with interest going, you better choose my Bible, or we're going to blows. And so the genius was we avoided that. Does this mean you can't have a moral state and a moral county? A moral state's pretty difficult. Unless the state is coming into the union that's already united in its, you know, its thinking, philosophy, and so forth. But you got to remember that any nation, any state coming into the United States to become a state in the union, whatever its laws are, it must be compatible. It must be in sync with the U.S. Constitution. In other words, you cannot deny people the religious rights of their freedom of the citizens, the freedom of religious expression. Now, we've talked about this in detail regarding Islam, why Islam cannot be a citizen of the United States. Because they will not support the Constitution. They will do everything they can to subvert it. They are basically swearing to become an insurgent citizen to destroy the United States. That is their intent. So they can't be citizens by the premise of what the oath of a citizen, the legal obligation of a citizen, to support and defend that Constitution, the supreme law of the land. So anybody that comes in and has a problem with the Constitution being the supreme law of the land, they're a problem. They can't be citizens, and the best thing is, don't let them come here, because they're not. It's one thing for them to visit, but don't let them come to stay.
because if they come to stay, then they'll just be problematic because they're bringing their paradigm. Like if you're living in one of those states, you hate California, you know what I'm saying? Because there's a lot, I mean, I see this all the time. And there's actually, I've seen billboards, you know, California's welcome, but, you know, keep your politics back in California, that type of stuff. I've seen them in Texas. I've seen them in Idaho. So moving on, this problem with common law and civil law, not civil law like Louisiana civil law. That is the legal system that was, you know, a part of Rome and a part of the Roman Catholic Empire and a part of all of the nations of the world except for Britain and a few of the British colonies and so forth. For the most, and Germany, right? Germany, the Protestant state, and the Germanic states. So, I mean, at that point in time when America was beginning to, you know, get up off of its knees and start, you know, walking, the Roman Catholic Empire was basically breaking up because more and more states were leaving it. More and more states were basically abandoning that paradigm. And so Louisiana at that point still had this affinity. That was the law system that they had. They said, well, we want to keep this. We don't know this common law stuff, and it sounds too common. For whatever reason, they just decided that they wanted to maintain what they had. And the beautiful thing about America and the beautiful thing about this self-determination thing is that they had the authority to do that. And they still have the authority to maintain that. As long as what they do is, you know, is, you know, in sync with or congruent to the U.S. Constitution.
So do you think that their affinity for the civil law had to do with the heritage of the inhabitants being mostly French, Spanish, German?
Yes, absolutely.
As opposed to
absolutely.
British?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And so the question was, how many of those people spoke English? Okay. I mean, this is what's amazing. Look at how fast Louisiana became a state in the United States. Boom. Did they have an English requirement? It's kind of interesting how, if you look at Louisiana, it is a case or a point of fact in so many different ways of a outlier. You know, hey, all the other states, well, Louisiana didn't do that. Louisiana didn't have to do that.
In many ways, Lord.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, that's why I said a while back, God bless Louisiana, because it proves this idea of uniformity mandates and conformity to federal requirements. Heck no. So anyway, let's talk about common law. So common law was declared in all other states as the justice system for the people of that state. And each state established their own state government. And so the people had common law courts. Those were the county courts. Because you didn't have a state court system. You just had these district courts throughout your territory, district courts throughout your state. When you finally created a state, you go, hey, well, let's create a state Supreme Court. And so in the Constitution is when the state Supreme Court started appearing, in the state constitutions, because territories were just that, territories. And they kind of fell under the federal district courts and so forth until they became states. So the state court started forming. And as a matter of fact, the state was formed by the counties. It wasn't all the people descending upon this small little tavern, you know, on top, underneath, and outside, and, you know, as far as their voices could carry to get their say in what they wanted. No, what they did was the counties selected delegates to represent their interests in going and creating a constitution for the state. And it was by delegation. Each county got one vote. That's exactly how it was done in Philadelphia, in the Federal Constitutional Convention. Therefore, the concept was these founded, these are just basic principles of how you do these things. And so that's what was being done. They were creating a state government and a state constitution. And the people that were creating the state government created a judiciary. Every state in the union after the original three that were, and as a matter of fact, I think the original three still conformed to the federal form of government. In other words, I think Kentucky, Tennessee, and Vermont, I don't know this for a fact, I'd have to look, but I believe they created bicameral legislative bodies that were based on state, based on counties. And they created a judiciary as well as an executive. Even though the majority, or I should say, all of the original 13 states were different. Not all of them had a judiciary. Not all of them had an executive. They all had a legislative, but some were unicameral, some were bicameral. And the bicameral was different in one state to the next. So that's how self-determination, that's how unique and how, I'll just say, uniquely divided the opportunities presented themselves, that the sky was the limit. Do what you want to do as a state. So in that state constitution, they started forming a judiciary. And they said, you know what, we've got to delegate jurisdiction to the judiciary. They may have thought that the delegation of common law would be, you know, granted to the state court. No, we have enumerated constitutions, not general constitutions. That's why when you actually read through the state constitution, you'll find that it actually lists what it has jurisdiction over. Why is it that they omitted common law? Because this was the justice for us people. You know, in our property disputes and, you know, our gambling or whether we're going to gamble or gambling's legal there or whatever. That was left to us. And we gave the state the authority and power to do those things that they needed to do for us, just like the federal government. It started growing, but interestingly enough, I've yet to find, I haven't looked at Hawaii and Alaska, and I haven't looked at all of them, but, you know, maybe in Hawaii and Alaska, they included jurisdiction over common law. But I know in Washington state, there was no delegation of authority in the state of Washington for the state court to have any jurisdiction over common law. And so what comes under this umbrella of common law? Well, property law, marriage, just the basic types of laws that, you know, we do in our regular routine and so forth, contract law. That's all basic common law. Well, how is it that we find almost every single one of those genres of law or disciplines of law, contract and property and those types of things? Why is that all under the state? That's common law. Everything under the sun has been pulled into the judiciary, whether you know it or not. Now, when we look at how a common law is supposed to be running in a state, this is why this is confusing, because we never did this. We never had anybody write Blackstone's commentaries, or let's call them Sean's commentaries on the law, to where Sean would basically lay out how the legal system works and what it's based on. Now, in the United States, all laws have to be pursuant, or I should say harmonious, with the Constitution. So you can't create a law that denies a U.S. citizen their right of religious expression or being able to speak themselves, you know, speak for themselves, what have you. And so, but we should have parameters on what it takes to be a citizen. We should not allow our enemies to be citizens. We can't allow it. The law should not allow it, and actually the oath requires it. Because when a person violates that oath, they're supposed to be stripped of their citizenship. Do you understand that, folks? Every Islamist in America who's calling for Sharia law, who is calling for all of these Islamic, you know, things to be done, you know, that you can't sell pork here, all of that type of stuff is just violating your rights and violating the Constitution, and they should be stripped of their citizenship. Communists are the same way. Communists are just like Islamists. They just don't have a church you go to, so you can't, you know, round them all up on a Saturday or Sunday or what have you, right? Okay, so back to this common law and civil law problem. So civil law is the law that's created by the federal government that is in pursuant to the Constitution. In other words, let me see here. A uniform rule of bankruptcies across the states. That's one thing that they have the authority to do. So anybody that lives in a county that goes into this financial, I'm in financial trouble, and I need to declare bankruptcy. That bankruptcy you go through must be in harmony with that federal law. So that's one thing that the Constitution has the supreme, you know, foundation on, that your county law can't muck with. Everything else, though, is all up for grabs as long as it's not been delegated to your to the federal government or to the state government. So here, this is, I wanted to go down this path because a lot of people think, well, you know, how do we get abortion illegal? You can do it at your county level. There's no reason why a community of people that all, you know, look at that as reprehensible, say you cannot have an abortion in this county and make it so. That becomes the civil law because you're not denying anybody's right of speech. That's protected. Your right of killing a baby is not. Your right of killing your child or terminating your pregnancy is not considered a right. It's not a protected right. And when the Supreme Court, you know, overreached their bounds, because if it's to be protected, it must be protected by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Now, when we look at the Ninth Amendment, does the Ninth Amendment protect the sacrifice and or the death? Because it all amendments that are not all enumerations, you know, cannot be used as disparaging the rights of these others that are retained by the people. Was there ever a point in time in our society where a woman had the right to actually terminate her pregnancy?
No.
Okay. So, in other words, this was a societal norm that that was not considered an individual right. Should it be?
No.
Okay. And so that is for the community to decide that you cannot do it here. In other words, you cannot terminate your pregnancy here. Let me ask you this. If a woman still chooses to terminate her pregnancy and goes to a county that can she come back without being arrested?
I would say no.
You would say she can't come back, or she would be arrested or wouldn't be arrested?
I would say she can't, or she would be arrested.
Okay. Now, here's the thing. This would be in conflict, but this is why this is not an easy issue. And this is why, you know, counties and common law, you know, kind of work under the Constitution and our framers. They worked under the auspices of the laws of nature, and nature's God. And so this is where the beautiful thing of how everybody decides how to solve their problem. You got a right to solve your problem that way, and you can do it, and we're supporting you on that. So if a county wanted to do that, that's fine. If a county said, yeah, well, you know, you can't get it done here, but we're not going to criminalize you for your sin. In other words, there are some arguments of saying it's hard to legislate morality. You know, it's one thing you can protect life. It's one thing that you can make sure certain sins don't occur in your county. But if you're going to state, because you open up a dangerous little pathway or open a bad door when you say you must be perfect to live in this county, because you can really have some zealots go bonkos on you, if you know what I mean. And it's kind of like the thought that, you know, for you to go to church, you have to be perfect. Then nobody would be able to go.
Right.
Okay. So, and that now we start looking at this.
Not even one.
That's right. Not even one. And so when we look at, you know, what a county should do, I'm not here to tell you what you should do. But I would point to the concept that Christ gave us. He said basically, you know, with the adulteress, he said, go sin no more. You know, but having adultery, in many states, adultery was illegal. And so when we come back from the break, Sean, I'd like you to pipe in on, you know, should adultery be prosecuted? You know, and should we go back down to those, you know, that type of moral prosecution. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so two things I wanted to add. Because can we really legislate morality? Can we go down that path? I think we can make it so the gambling, pornography, and those things are illegal and outlawed in the county. Those types of acts of sin are, you know, public types of sin. But when we look at abortion, that's a very private thing, right? But it's not private when you have to go to somebody else to terminate that. Now, even though there have been prescriptions out there that you can terminate that way, and that would open up a black market. I mean, this is not an easy issue. But the point is that this is an issue that the communities really, and the problem is nobody wants to take the time, nobody has the time to really pull together and mold your community the way you want to be governed. Are you really happy with just leaving it up to the tyrants who want to step up and say, don't worry, we'll take care of you? We have a self-governing system that you have to get involved in. And you want to be involved in this. But going down to what common law is and what the laws are based on the common law, that common law would be driving civil law at that common law level. In other words, when you read the definition of common law are the laws that are derived from the common cases. In other words, they create these standing precedents. You know, you can't do this, you can't do this. And so whether the legislators create that, then that's great. But the courts have the ability to basically render verdicts based on case law, or I should say precedents of the common law in that area. Now, your common law is going to be different than this, you know, the state across the river from you. Period. It's going to be different because their common law is based on different set of laws that they've created their own precedents, and their laws should not perturb yours. And the fact that the federal government has been getting into, you know, what you can do for common law, what you can't do, just flies in the face of the function of a limited and defined government, not to basically tell us what to do. We have self-determination. Now, there's lots of people out there that argue and say, well, it's for our own good that we're, you know, to be managed that way. But the real question comes back to this. When we start looking at Mary, you know, the adulteress, or when we start looking at, you know, the mother who terminated her child's, you know, life or what have you, how do you handle that? How do you create those laws and make those laws what we would consider in a just system? Now, I'm not here judging. I'm just saying that how you do that is a very, very tricky business. But everybody should have some say on it, if you know what I mean, right?
Right. Everybody should have a say yes. on their own.
Right.
Right. But when not you on the rights of other individuals who don't have the agency to speak for themselves.
Right.
And like you were saying, you can't legislate morality.
Yep.
You can't force people to be moral. But the law is still grounded in morality. And there is no morality. The morality has to come from somewhere. It's just, it's not like this thing that just exists that everybody knows. You know, the morality comes from somewhere. And when you're talking about abortion specifically, you're taking away the rights of a person that science has proven when this becomes a person is at conception.
Right. So what?
And you can deny science all you want, but you're just denying the facts that we, that everyone knows to be true. And if you go back to morality, it says in the scriptures, I knew you when I wove you together in your mother's womb. So that fact has been, that fact of religion has been proven through science. The other thing is with the adulterers and marriage, why is the state involved in marriage to start with when it has nothing to do with the state?
Right. To answer your question, or to answer anybody's question on, you know, what is common law, unless you've actually created, and to be clear here, when Congress declared British common law to be the law of the Washington State Territory, they actually violated the Constitution, because British common law was based on the King James Version of the Bible. They can't dictate that. They could say, you know, a rendition of, but not, you know, a common law based on the Bible, because now they've endorsed or established a basic legal system on a particular doctrine of faith. So, again, as we look at common law should be different between counties, but the nuances are those differences. I think that when we start looking at, you know, what's the best way for us to function in crime and these other types of things, I think what we'll end up finding is this common ground. Because you're going to have, until you can create a theocracy where you get everybody to agree, and this is why I say, you know, I'm just waiting for the second coming. Because that's a theocracy I can follow. Because as I look at, you know, all the differences in those types of things, it creates an interesting set. Now, it's not, I'm not, you know, one that's going to go out and start, you know, funding people to travel for abortions or anything like that. Nor am I one that's going to, you know, try to, you know, convert a bunch of people to a specific doctrine. I'm only here to basically tell you how we're to govern ourselves. That as a Republican form of government, we choose our representatives. So when you create that constitutional convention, you're in your county, you're gonna have to choose who's going to represent your precinct or your, you know, area of precincts. They have these, they break us down politically all the way down to a precinct. Every state is done the same way. So when you're looking at the counties, all the counties have the same precincts, and that's all based on population, usually, in the state. Because some states are really rural, so it's a, you know, a very small number, and highly populated states is a pretty big number. But nevertheless, as we look at precincts, then however you're going to obtain your representation, you're going to have a choice of who's going to represent you. Here's the beautiful thing. If you have everybody in your community that basically goes to the same church or is a part of the same faith or at least shares the same faith values, in other words, you know, a variety of Protestants and Episcopals and so forth, where, you know, you may not agree on things, but, you know, you agree on a lot of things, then I think that's where you start. And over time, you can evolve and, you know, maybe create a county of Enoch, if you know what I mean, as you work together and hopefully. You know, I would think that if your county is a God-fearing and God-loving county, then what would keep you back from actually getting to that point, right?
Yes, sir.
I mean,
and but, I mean, you can. Well, what confuses me or consternates me, I guess, and I'm not in favor of any kind of theocracy where you have, because look at what the government's done with contract law and common law since they've had the reins of power. Imagine what they would do with, quote, religion.
Yes.
But there's no doubt that our country was founded on these principles that right. come from the Christian religion and Christian values.
Right. Yes.
So when you try to tear that down, it leaves you in a vacuum where does your basis for the law come from? It comes out of morality.
Yes.
And where does that morality come from? So when we start taking God out of the picture completely and trying to be a secular, you know, have the government being completely secular, and I'm not saying that's what you're advocating for.
I was going to go,
I'm just saying that's what people, that's the general argument now is, oh, you know, I'm an atheist, so your religion shouldn't have anything to do with my laws and my life.
No, so
well, I'm sorry, but so let that's me, where it comes from.
So let me do this. Psst. We're already godless. They made us godless. The law is coming after you if you're trying to invoke God, you know, in your town square with a nativity scene. Psst, they've already done it to us. What I'm really trying to say is the sky's the limit. You just need, you know, not a democracy, because if you use the Constitution as the exemplar, then when you establish a law, it should not be based on a democracy, just 50% plus one. To make it so that you can actually inflict a paradigm such as abortion is going to be illegal, you need to have a supermajority. Does that make sense? Because yes, all you're going to do is you're going to create infighting, and you're going to create this this vacuum of people that get sucked into, you know, this revolution against, you know, this tyranny that they feel they're being suppressed to. And I honestly think that, you know, that threshold should be really high before you get there to doing those things. It's easy to do, though, like I said, if you're already a community. I'll give you a good case in point. You could be a large section of a very heavily populated county, and then just look and say, you know what? We've got enough people here to be our own county. Let's break away from King County, and let's call ourselves North Bend County. And then we're going to, you know, we will be able to free ourselves from the stupid, you know, crap that they're doing, not having to have abortion. We can actually protect ourselves and our babies. So forth and so on. Does that, I mean, there is a way forward to do this. But folks,
well, it brings to mind a question that I have about what you're talking about. These same people that you're talking about who are scared of religion and don't want a theocracy, which I agree with the theocracy part of it, but they don't want any morality based on Christian values, are the same people that are developing sanctuary cities and sanctuary counties for illegal migrants.
Yes, yes. The godless
so where
people.
Do they base that? What? Why is that a good thing? Why is that moral? Why is that virtuous? But abortion is, you know, neutral.
So we have to be the guardians of the Constitution. I say this all the time. And so when you see a county wanting to become a sanctuary county, in other words, they are basically thumbing their nose at the Constitution, saying we are not going to support that, then all the counties in that state should actually descend heavily upon that county. And every politician that has signed, we're signing up, this is now a sanctuary county, there should be a bench warrant in every other county that is supporting the Constitution and calling them out and demanding they be removed immediately. Because in office, you do not have the option to violate your oath of office directly like that. I mean, that is such an egregious violation that they should be removed. And so the message should be loud and clear that if you step somehow, let's say you get in an Uber and you drive through our county, we will arrest you and we will basically try you and we will convict you of no longer being eligible. And so we have mechanisms of holding counties available, but the reality, because going down that path is like a tickle fight. The reality is what you do when you have a state where you've got these population centers and so forth. If you already have a majority of the counties, when you have a majority of the counties, you, and I mean a significant majority, like two-thirds, you know, or almost two-thirds, where, you know, 60%, then as far as I'm concerned, you have enough political clout to create a constitutional convention, rewrite the state constitution, and get rid of all these powers that they shouldn't have, pull them back down to your county, and so that when counties want to violate that, the state government now will have to enforce these things, because the representation of the state government would be based upon this legislative body, which would be bicameral based upon counties, not based on population anymore. The only legislative body that would be based on population would be the state legislature. I should say the House of Representatives. But every county would be guaranteed one representative, just like every state in the union, which means that they won't have the power play that the progressives have had with these population centers. It literally neutralizes the power that the population centers are wielding today, if that makes sense. So this is how we actually start slowly tearing apart this stranglehold that they have on us of getting away with doing things unconstitutional. And see, this is important. You know, when we start going down this path, we have this beautiful blessing and opportunity to look over our shoulder at the U.S. Constitution and say, how should we invoke our government and our Constitution for our county? I would look at the Constitution and try to ensure that you have this three-fourths rule of changing your Constitution, all of those types of things, because those are designed to protect you from the whimsical desires of whatever the trend is. You know, we want to be fed, or we should have this, and we just have a pop, you know, you get enough of the population. No, homosexual marriage, 50% plus one. Are you kidding me?
The pestilential breath of faction.
There you go. that's awesome. So
I wanted to ask a question while we're on this topic. I know we're going down a kind of a rat hole.
Oh, definitely. But yeah.
Doesn't the federal government have the right to? I mean, isn't creating a sanctuary city or a sanctuary county considered legally insurrection?
Yes. So what happened is that the judges looked at invaders, and they redefined invaders as immigrants, and they started calling them non-documented immigrants. But bottom line, the Constitution, the framers, referred to people coming here without authority, without authorization, prior authorization, or at least obtaining authorization to enter into this country. People who have snuck in here without any authorization at all are invaders.
Correct.
And the Constitution said that they will be repelled. And there's 3 points in the Constitution that actually say you got to do this, that states have the responsibility of doing it if, you know, they if Congress can't respond in time or what have you. We have an obligation to support the Constitution from us being overran. I mean, Madison basically said, if we allow an invasion to persist, it will destroy us. It may take a long time. It's not something that's a battle is won in a week. Look at how long it took for Islam to destroy Persia. It didn't happen overnight. It took a long time. And look how long it's taking Islam to destroy these states in Europe. They still haven't completely done it, but they're getting closer and closer every day with their multiple marriages and this open migration, bringing more and more in. This is why some of these European nations are actually repelling them now.
And it's a snowball effect, because now in the United States, it's not going to take as long, if nothing's done, it's not going to take as long as it did in Europe. Well, I've just seen in the last week, 3 separate states make that proclamations that this is Arab American month. And they have the kids out in the schoolyard, and they have all the Muslim people there teaching them about Muslim culture and stuff at school,
mm-hmm.
in public school.
Yeah,
where they're not allowed to pray or read a Bible.
Yeah, so
they can learn about Muslim culture.
Yeah, but see, okay, so we talked about this before, though. How did this even get a toehold? Because the jurist basically redefined Islam as more than just, you know, as only a religion. But Islam is far more than a religion. It is a governing religion, a land, temporal, and spiritual governing church. They establish their own government of the land. The supreme law of the land becomes the Quran and the Hadiths. And so it's a direct violation and a complete contrast to what we're supposed to have.
Yeah, there's no Romans 13 in the Quran.
And so at the risk of, you know, stating what we stated before, you know, jurists do not have the authority to redefine these things. But that's what they do. And then they say, oh, yeah, those people can stay. You know, they can become citizens. And they're literally undermining, these jurists know what they're doing. They're undermining the Constitution by empowering and giving aid and comfort to our enemies. If you literally read the language of the Constitution, every single one of these people, every single jurist that has made these types of rulings, redefining and so forth, they all should be removed from office immediately. The only reason that nothing is happening is due to our illiteracy on the Constitution.
It's alarming.
It is alarming. No. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, as we, you know, kind of wrap this up, we got 6 minutes left. I mean, all I wanted to say is, you know, every county should have its own Blackstone commentaries. Every county should. And moving forward, as you start forging and start establishing what your common law is and what the legal system is for your county, as it meshes with the state and federal, it has to mesh with that. And I think that there would be a good commentary on the federal laws of the land and the state laws, you know, so that you have these three tiers, because we have a hybrid constitutional republic. We should have three constitutions at a minimum. Federal, state, and your local constitutions where we delegate our power. If you don't want to have any county government, then don't worry, the state will step in for you, and they'll be good. They'll behave well. I'm just kidding. So anyway, it's not an easy thing to get your arms around. And all these people talk about common law. They want to just focus on just literally simplifying it to the Bible only and the way the British, you know, the way they function without any regard to the Constitution.
Right. And the common law, I mean, just doing a rudimentary search about it and getting a little information on the origins, it might have begun as starting from the scripture and the Mosaic law. Uh-huh. But it is morphed and evolved to be the whims of the lords and monarchies and different people throughout the evolutionary process. And like you said, it doesn't fit to our form of government.
Uh-huh. No, it does not. And so we have a right and an obligation to protect ourselves from predatory things like this, from predators from other countries and predators of other faiths coming in to destroy us. We have a right to, you know, that's even biblical too. No man is obligated to take in his enemy. As a matter of fact, the Bible tells us to not let your enemies in your home.
Absolutely.
But you're to pray for them. We're to pray for them and ask, you know, for the, you know, for forbearance and forgiveness and, you know, and to pray for them. We're to pray for our enemies, but not while they're in our home. That makes sense, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
And turning the other cheek doesn't mean tolerance. It means gaining respect.
Okay. Correct. Well, we've got basically just a little over 3 minutes. What we'll do in the next session, because I think we just wrapped up on 21, or no, 19. We still got to do 20 and 21. So that, and that's basically all for 81. Then we'll dive into 82. We're getting there. We're almost halfway through. So the next session, we'll try to dive into that. But when it, folks, if it hurts your head on common law, civil law, and these types of things, you're not the only one. But when people come up to you and tell you that they're subject matter experts, and they want to start quoting Blackstone commentary and so forth, they're, I'm sorry, I'm the guy that's going to throw the wrench into the works here, because it's not true. It's not so. We have a constitution that is our supreme law of the land. We don't have a king. We don't have a Bible as a nation. We have a constitution. And so we better start learning. And, you know, this is the time where America can really come to its full fruition as to its what its potential is. Look at all of the states and the resources each of these states have and the ability to be able to harvest those resources. Now, we would pray and hope that the harvesting would be done so in such a way that it wouldn't devastate the state when they're done. You know, in other words, basically strip mine it down to nothing so it just becomes an abyss in the middle of the country. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I know what you mean. I mean, you think about where I live, and that's exactly what what's happened.
Yes.
Is the overreach from the government and the judiciary and all the things that we're discussing. That is the cause and the root problem that we're dealing with. If it was the people who lived in these communities that were making decisions about how to steward their environment, it would be a whole different scenario.
You know,
what happens is you get these robber barons, for lack of a better term, who have been empowered and subsidized by the government's overreach. Then they just come in and destroy everything, and then they go back where they came from.
Yes.
Let me
add this about Louisiana, because if you look at Louisiana, I think there was a point in time where the Mississippi was modified, and I don't understand the ins and outs, but I do understand that the way it was modified and some of the things that happened over time because of a drought, is the Mississippi River getting low? Because
no, with the modification was that they were trying to stop the river from changing course because it would have completely cut off New Orleans and dry docked it. So they did locks and different.
I'm actually talking about the Mississippi all the way up through many of the states. There was a lot of engineering being done to where I think upstream they're talking about there are parts of the Mississippi that are not navigable anymore because of what they did. And they did it to try to deal with the years of heavy rain. So in other words, to try to solve one problem because of the laws of nature, right? You know, nature's God. You had a flood, and you had all these problems. So what they tried to do is they tried to outsmart God. And I think they widened it, they did all these things, and now they're having a hard time navigating it because it's not deep enough for the ships they need. Anyway, this is what happens when people think they're smarter, or their idea is, you know, the best. And, you know, you'll have... you'll have years like this when you have droughts and so forth. So, folks, when we come back, we'll get back onto the Federalist Papers. I just thought it was a good time to take a quick dive back and talk about the common law, the civil law that you develop in your county, state, and so forth. So, anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.